I would like to introduce our speaker from my home state of Massachusetts, Dave.
Thank you, Jamie. Good help. You're the best of the best.
I don't want to break up.
No, thanks. Hey, everybody, I'm Dave Perry, I'm an alcoholic. Well, how cool it is to be back out tonight. Thank you so much for the invitation. I consider it an honor and privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, but to be able to come back out here to Quakertown, it seems like I come out every year right around now. It seems like the same setting every time I come, and I love it. And I love seeing a lot of my old friends and old faces and just keep doing this thing. You know, you get to know friends and people my sponsor said, when you're running around, you're staying active in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is what happens, and he's right. So I want to thank you for the invitation. I also want to thank my buddy Chris, who jumped in the car with me. Then you heard the preamble today with that Boston accent right over there. you know, he might not be taking the podium tonight, but he's carrying a message. He drove 5 hours for a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told him we were going to Quincy. Here we are. My sponsor told me, David, whenever, out of respect to God, out of respect to Alcoholics Anonymous, out of respect to the meeting, and out of respect to the people who attend that meeting, whenever you take a podium, I'm asking you, Dave, just please keep this in mind. Always, always, always wear a coat and a tie. But he said nothing about keeping it on, so when I tie it off right now for you, because I'm going to get warm, I can tell. You know, what I feel right here in this meeting, which I've come to often, what I feel in this meeting right here, right now, I have not always felt in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to AA for a long time not feeling what I feel with you guys here tonight. For me, for the longest time, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what it was for me? It was a meeting I didn't want to attend. The group I didn't have to join. The book I refused to read. The big book? Oh, two big things. I don't need that thing, you know. I don't need a book to show me how to stop drinking. What do I need that for, you know? I'm just going to quit. You know, it was a sponsor I certainly didn't need to have tell me what to do. In the steps, I found absolutely no use for my problems. How were those possibly going to solve my problems? For the longest time, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I thought? I thought, you guys are going to show me how to suffer in sobriety one day at a time. You can suffer one day at a time with us, Dave. It's not a lifetime of suffering. Don't look at it that way. Just come here and suffer with us one day at a time. Now, you weren't telling me that, but that's what I was hearing. You know, I know today that's not the case. I know today Alcoholics Anonymous, thanks to God-inspired sponsorship, I understand what it's really all about. AA is nothing but the showing up business. Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing but the making it available business. Alcoholics Anonymous is really nothing but the message delivery business. That's all we're doing here. We have a message to deliver. God writes it. We deliver it. Period. Period. We don't write it. It's not our message. It's God's message. We just show up and deliver it. My sponsor, we're nothing but paper boys and paper girls for God. That's all we are. Paper lady? Huh? Paper mister? Just showing up. And he's knew me. My sponsor knew me. He says, Dave, I know how you are. Hear me right now. Understand what I'm about to tell you. We're not in the results business. We're not in the outcome business. We're not in the keeping score business. Put down the scorecard, Dave. You don't get them sober. You don't get them drunk. You're just not that powerful. Your job, Dave, is simply to show up and try to carry a message. That's all we're asked to do. Look at our 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the, it's the result. It's not something that might happen if we're lucky, one of many things that might occur. No, it is the result. Take these steps, you'll get a spiritual awakening. That's the result. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. 100 men and women who wrote this book and put these steps together did not have to say that. They could have left that word. They could just carry this message to other alcoholics. No, they say we try because that's all we're asked to do. And that point got driven home to me 10 years ago back in Boston on a Saturday afternoon at my home group. I'll never forget it. This guy, a guy took a podium that day. Haven't seen him before, never seen him since. But that day he took a podium and he said one particular line that's never, ever, ever left me. He gets up there, he says, I've been sober 20 years, the guy says, I've been sober 20 years, and in my 20 years sobriety, he says, I sponsored over 200 men, he said, 200 men with 100% success rate. I'm like, 100%? all my guys are drinking. I said, how you doing that? He goes, no, don't get me wrong, a lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years, and I call that 100% success. He showed up and tried. My sobriety date, guys, is November 15, 2001. A little over 13 years, 9 months, and a couple days ago, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say I came back, I'd been here before. November 15, 2001 is not my first sobriety date. Collecting them for years prior to that. You know, reset. I had a string of them going on. Prior to November 15, 2001, I'll be in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. Chronically relapsing. Couldn't understand what you guys had. More often than not, didn't want what you guys had. I'm here simply and solely because some force in my life has me here. At first it was my job, then it was my family, then of course the courts are in my life. So I'm coming to alcohol, I'm running for cover. That's all I'm doing here, just running for cover. You know, I'm coming here on a nightly basis. I'm looking around saying, my God, what happened? You know, I'm looking at this thing work for you when it ain't working for me. You know, I'm watching you guys not drink on purpose. I'm like, what is that about? You know, how's that working for you? I couldn't understand how it was. And every stretch of sobriety I had, every stretch during those 12 years, whether I stayed sober a week, whether I stayed sober a month, whether I stayed sober a year, at one point I stayed sober 3 years. And every stretch of sobriety I had during that 12-year period, no matter how long it was always marked by the same commonality. I was miserable. Miserable. Sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it felt like. Sentenced to sobriety. You know? Now, you ask me how I was doing. Super great, fine, happy, joyous, free, you know? No, it wasn't. I was saying that because you were saying that. That was my program of recovery. I'm just going to mimic you guys right back, you know? Suffering. Untreated alcoholism. Every stretch of sobriety was untreated alcoholism. Bad case sobriety. Bad sobriety going on. I'm looking around on a nightly basis going, my God, please tell me there's more to my life than this. If all I have to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs, hiding out in church basements the rest of my life, shoot me now. I'm not going to make it. I was a meeting maker who didn't make it. You know what I mean? And I saw your signs, living to live, let go and let God one day at a time, easy does it. Then I saw the one sign I really liked. Exit, boom, out the door, you know what I mean? That's the one that made sense, right out the door, you know? Oh, my God. And trust me, I know how to quit drinking. I know quitting is not my issue. I can quit any time, down 1,000 times. I have the quitting thing down, to be quite honest with you. I really do. Can you guys show me how to stay quit? Can you guys show me how to maybe not start again? Or better yet, can you show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? This is my rub, you guys. Sure, I can grab my coffee and I can take my seat night after night after night after night. But until and unless I get comfortable with you guys, to be quite honest, I'm not staying. There's ease and comfort. It's waiting for me in a bottle out there, not here. Now keep in mind, I'm not doing anything you're doing to get your freedom. I'm not doing anything you're doing to get your spiritual awakening. I'm not doing anything to get in that new freedom, that new happiness. You promised me. You promised me nightly. My God, every night you promised me this new freedom. No, not for me. I wasn't getting that. This new happiness. You promised me I was going to be amazed before I was halfway through. I'm like, halfway through what? Lunch? My day? What were you talking about? I wasn't getting any of that. Why? Because I wasn't doing anything you were doing to get that. I thought if I sat next to the happy, shiny guys, I'd get what they got. Didn't work that way. You know, look, I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. What makes you think I'm going to find my recovery here in Alcoholics Anonymous watching the guy next to me take action? Well, I take none. None. And that's the way it would go. So throughout that 12-year period, in and out, burning my life to the ground twice over, destroying anything good and everything good, the one thing in my world that gave me any relief, however short-lived it was in a bottle. It was also the one thing in my life that to keep destroying everything good. And I didn't know what to do. And so marked those 12 years, burning my life to the ground, destroying everything good twice over. Yet here I stand tonight, 13 years, 9 months, and a couple days away from my last drink. You know, and I'm here to tell you guys the truth tonight. Didn't drive all the way out here to Quakertown to lie to you guys, you know. Chris and I can jump back in the car. Yeah, fool Quakertown tonight, feet first, fool them all. Yeah, we did. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to report the truth. The truth of the matter is this. I've been happily, joyfully sober for the better part of these last 13 years. Happy and sober in the same sentence. Before it was one or the other, make up your mind. Happy and sober, both. Oh, how are you doing that, you know? Set free. Free from the obsession to drink. Free from the obsession to drug. Set free. How is that possible? What is it that marks these last 12 years, 13 years, 9 months, and a couple days? What makes these last 13 years so markedly different than those 12 years in and out, in and out, in and out? Comes down to one thing and one thing only, one word and one word only, to be quite honest, that marks the difference. As I look at these two separate incidents in my periods of my life, one word marks the difference, and I'll tell you exactly what it is. Sponsorship. Sponsorship. This time around, I got a sponsor. God-inspired, God-centered, God-driven, God-reliant, God-inspired, God-conscious through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Look, I wasn't afraid to tell me the truth for the first time we sat down. A guy looked me in the eye and said, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you feel, those are not my concerns. If what we do walking down this path, if what we do taking these actions make you a little uncomfortable along the way, he says, so be it. Makes you a little uneasy along the way, so be it. Hurts your feelings along the way, so be it. He says, I'd rather step on your toes before I stand in your grave. I'm going to tell you the truth. You, David, you've been lying all your life and people lying back. It's about time you heard the truth. He said, the truth of the matter is this. This is a program for the people who want it. Needing what we have means, God knows I needed what you had. 12 years running, losing everything good, destroying anything and everything that meant anything to me. I'm losing it, watching it disappear in front of my eyes. I needed what you guys had. But until unless I wanted what you guys had, needing it would mean absolutely nothing. He says, you think you got a problem, huh, Dave? You think you got a problem with the drink? You don't. A little problem with cocaine, Dave? You don't. A little problem with the judge, your boss, your family? You don't, you don't, you don't. You got no, you don't have any problem. Not a one. You got one single soul problem, Dave. I'm going to tell you exactly what it was. I'll tell you exactly what it is. He says, you're selfish and you're self-centered to the core. And until and unless you look at, examine, and take action on that, hear me right now, you're not going to recover. You're not. There's things to do here, and you've never done any of them. Never done any of them. He says, you want me to sponsor you? Let me tell you exactly what I'm going to do, just so you understand it. Let's keep it real simple. I'll take you down this path. I'll walk you down this path. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to ask you to hold mine. I'm going to ask you to trust me. I'm going to walk you down a path, the pathway to power. I'm going to take your hand. I'm going to put your hand here in the power greater than yourself, then I'm going to step aside. I'm not going to go home and stand in front of the mirror and admire what a wonderful job I did with Dave Perry. I'm going out and get me a new guy right away, and I'm going to teach you how to do the very same thing, because that's the one single soul thing that's going to save your life. He says, you want me to sponsor you? I'll be glad to. But understand this right now. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you how to run your life. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to tell you which pieces to go to, not to go to, where to sit, not to sit, who to date, not to date. I'm not the kind of sponsor going to have him call him every night. As a matter of fact, Dave, I'd really rather you don't. You know what he says? He says, I'm going to get you to God. That's my job. Real simple. I'm going to get you to God, and I'm going to get you to God quick, because you're suffering from only one problem as far as I can see it, Dave. You got one problem only. You're suffering from a lack of power. You got no power going on here. And I'm going to help you find one. But this time around, Dave, it's going to be one that's bigger than you. And so began the journey. And then you know what else this guy did? He picks up this book, you guys, and he turns to page 44, and he points out a line that I'd read 1,000 times and never once saw. I swear I read it 1,000 times. He says, Dave, we suffer from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Guess they're going to get me one of them. Got to find me a spiritual experience. How, what, where, when? No idea where that's coming from. And then think about an illness. How is my drinking an illness? Seriously, how is it an illness? I'm just the guy who likes to get drunk every night. Work hard, play hard, rah, rah, rah. How is that possibly an illness? And by the way, if it is an illness, could I get a pill, please? If there was a spirituality pill out there, trust me, I'd take one. I know I would. No, I take two. I know how that goes. One is good, two is great. Could I get 10, please? Let me get to the month with you guys. You know what I mean? Well, how about this? If this is an illness, please check me in the hospital. Cut this thing called alcoholism out of me and let me go home. Let's just wrap this thing up. 8 years ago, I had my gallbladder removed. Haven't thought about it since. Don't hang out with other gallbladder sufferers. You know what I mean? It means gallbladder's anonymous. Read books about gallbladderism. It's done. They took it. Done. Over. That's the kind of illness I'm looking for. But no, no, no. Not here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not if you're the whole and the soul alcoholic. Not if you're the real alcoholic. The hopeless variety the big book talks about. Who wants the kind of illness that requires that we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as its solution? Who wants the kind of illness that requires that we do searching and fearless moral inventories as its solution? Make amends and restitution to everyone we've harmed but over the course of our entire lives as its solution? Or God forbid, lay your lives down on a daily basis for our brothers and sisters sick and suffering as its solution? Not me. No, no, no. Not me. Show me an easier, softer way. For 12 years, I searched for an easier, softer way. I thought I could find one. 100 men and women thought they could find an easier, softer way too, remember? They couldn't either. Why? Because this is the easier, softer way. We have it right here. Thank God I finally figured out. There's nothing to figure out. It's all been figured out for us, you know? Same page, page 44. My sponsor pointed out another line to me. He says, Dave, you're the hole in the soul, the hopeless variety. You only got 2 choices. Just 2. Hey, it's like you're at a game show, Dave. Hey, behind door number 1, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number 2, doom to an alcoholic death. And I'm like, oh. Can I phone a friend, please? Someone out there help me with this. You know what I mean? I got my mother going, choose the spiritual principles, Dave, you know? And I'm wondering just how bad an alcoholic death we're talking about anyway. You know what I mean? I need a little more info, you know? Oh, anyway, thank God. That's just so one of so many things this guy pointed out for me. But he set me on the path, you know? So what was it like when I first got to you guys? I'll tell you what it was like. It was 1989. I was 29 years old when I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the outside, it looked pretty good. On the outside, what you see is I'm practicing law up on the North Shore of Boston. I'm working for a pretty prestigious law firm. Been there about 3 or 4 years, one of the larger firms on the North Shore of town. If you met me in a bar, I'll tell you all about this. Give me 2 minutes. You'd hear about it. Trust me. You can get that right at you. And I'd point out my $50,000 sports car parked strategically right outside that window so we could see from both the pool table and the bar. You know what I mean? We'll go back to my four-bedroom, three-story brick townhouse in Medford. And I'd be wearing $800 suits. And I'd have all the trappings of success all around me. But what you also would have seen had I even known it existed, what you also would have seen had I even known it was there, you would have seen a hole in the soul this wide. That all the drink and all the cocaine, shiny sports cars, beautiful townhouses, and the silkiest suits in the world just couldn't fill. I just couldn't fill the hole. And when I was 29 years old, 4 years into my career, my boss has looked at me and said, David, either you get sober or you get out. They call me a disgrace to my law firm. And I took issue with them. I fought them on that. Thanks to you guys and the help you give me along the way, I know that today they were right. I was a disgrace to my law firm, disgrace to my profession, disgrace to my family. I was a disgrace to myself. And the biggest part of that whole thing looking back was this, you guys. I never meant to be. And I didn't want to be. But it just kept happening. And I couldn't stop it. All by myself, I couldn't seem to stop it. And at 29, they said, either you get sober, you get out. And so simply and solely to save that job and for no other reason, I jumped on a plane. Check it out. I jumped on a plane and flew out to Ephrata, Pennsylvania, to the Amish farmlands of Lancaster County, to a place called, I'm sure many of you might know it, ARC The Terraces. Not there anymore. But I was out there. It's the retreat now, I think. And so began the journey. And you know, you heard Chris tonight read the preamble. If the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing. Except I didn't have one of them. I had three bosses who had a desire I stopped drinking. You know what I mean? Maybe they should have gone. I don't know. It wasn't going to work for me from the start. But so began the journey. So began that 12 years in and out. It started in July 5th, my first day sober, 1989, Ephrata, Pennsylvania. 12 years in and out, would follow. You know, and I got to look at those 12 years and say, what are we going to change up? Now, I give you a whole list of things that I might want to change up, but I'm going to cut you to the chase. One of the most important things I got to look at this time around was I made the mistake of coming in here back then thinking drinking was my problem. And why would I? And for the sake of this conversation, I'm talking about the drink, the drug, and all the things like it. They're all on the table. But if it's Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to just call to drink. I got a drinking problem. Everyone in my world is telling me I got a drinking problem. My mom and dad are telling me I got a drinking problem. Brothers and sisters are telling me I got a drinking problem. The best friends in my life, most of whom are no longer in my life today, were telling me I got a drinking problem. So you know what I said to myself? I said, okay, fine. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take the drink out of the equation. Problem solved. That's it. Yeah, I'm going to quit drinking. Quit drinking, yeah. Problem with that, I wasn't a problem drinker. I was an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. Set me free. There was magic in that bottle. To be quite honest, I could have no sooner walked away from that drink, what that drink was doing for me, than I could have flown to the moon. I couldn't walk away from that. There was power, magic. There was, my God, you know what I'm talking about in that bottle. And I didn't cross. You see, guys, when you take my drink away, you don't just solve my problem. You see, when you're taking my drink away, that's when my problem's just beginning. It's like you just create it. Now what? Sorry, ain't coming over. Ain't coming out. You know? I'm not moving. I'm paralyzed, socially and otherwise, without that drink. You know, and I didn't cross some magical line years into my drinking and figure this out. Can I take back to October 1973 for 1 minute of Friday night, little patch of woods in Reading, Massachusetts, 13 years old, off to a junior high school dance with my buddies? We're going to get drunk for the first time. Knowing all the pains, what a monumental night. Monumental, I'm still talking about it. October 73, you kidding? My life changed that night. My life changed that night forever, forever. It would never be the same, ever. Now, I had all the pains, precious problems. I had all the fears, doubts, insecurities any 13-year-old kid might have had. I had a couple extra tossed my way. I was the goofiest looking kid you ever saw. You know, triple lens glasses, big nose, buck teeth, 6'1" by the age of 7. You know what I mean? Every class had when it was me, you know. But 15 minutes in the woods with my buddies that night, 15 minutes with that drink to my lips, and my God, everything changed. No, I'm not saying the glasses didn't fall off, the nose didn't shrink, the teeth didn't straighten. I didn't drop an inch or two. You know what happened as best I could describe it that night in that little patch of woods? The fear went away. It disappeared. I was okay when I was drinking. I liked you guys better when I was drinking. I liked the world around me better when I was drinking. Everything was cool when I was drinking. I was okay. I liked myself better. I did. I liked myself. I was okay when I was drinking. And I couldn't find that anywhere in my world. And I made a decision that night. I know I did. I didn't say it out loud. And I didn't. I didn't think it out loud, but I know I made it. I made a decision that night to make that drink the most important thing in my life. I did. And to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. Prices I don't even know I'm paying. I'm going to pay a lot of prices. My seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, this chair, this didn't come free. Got a huge and heavy price tag hanging from that seat. Heartache, misery, loss, frustration, loss of careers, loss of jobs, loss of material possessions, houses, cars, friendships, the tears in my parents' eyes. Hell, ultimately my freedom. That's on that price tag. I lost that too along the way. You know, how can I best describe it to you? How about this? 21 years old, walk into a liquor store downtown Boston. I'm on Boylston Street. Walk to the back cooler, grab a 12-pack of Budweiser, walk back up front, pop it down the counter. The guy looks at me. I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $14.95. And every real friendship you've ever had. I paid it. 31 years old, walk into a bar like a shot and a beer, please. Bartender looks at me. I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $8, mister. In your marriage. I remember like it was yesterday, you guys. I was 41. I was on Tremont Street in the Back Bay. I went to my favorite package store. I walked in. I walked up to the front counter. I pointed to the top shelf. I said, I'd like that fifth of tequila, please. Yeah, the mezcal, the one with the worm. He grabs the bottle, pops it down, looks at me. I look at him. He says, that'll cost you $17.95 and your license to practice law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Sounds about right. I'll take the bottle. Please. I needed the bottle. I needed what was in there. What was in that bottle meant more to me than my career? Of course it did. More to me than my friendships. More to me than my family. More to me than my... everything. I paid the price. What would you pay? What did your seat cost you? Any freebies? Anyone hit the crest of a winning streak? A lottery, perhaps, and come to Alcoholics Anonymous? Anyone out there, you know? Never see a hand on that. What's up with that, you know? You get it. We all know the prices we pay. Whether we know or don't know, prices we pay. Anyway, so I get through high school, get through college. Nothing but a four-year blackout for me. Wish I could tell you more. My friends said we had fun. Reunions, they fill me in. You know how that goes. And 4 years later, I graduated with a degree in economics in cocaine addiction. And off to law school I go. Busy, busy, busy. Things to do, you know. Let's get some books. Let's study. Yeah, you know. I do the law school thing in 3 years, passed the bar exam, first time out. Now I'm out there working. First, second, third, fourth year into my career. I stayed a step or two ahead of the drink for a long time, guys. I got through school. I got through the first couple years of my career, but now it's falling apart. I'm no longer a step or two ahead. As a matter of fact, the drink is way ahead of me at this point. By the age of 29 years old, you know, if drinking was something I was doing, you know, once in a while, sprinkled around my lifetime in the beginning, at 29 years old, life was something I was doing, you know, once in a while, sprinkled around my drinking. I wasn't showing up. My friends couldn't depend on me. My family couldn't depend on me. My work couldn't depend on me. I'm 29 years old. I'm out of control. I'm 29 years old and the drink is now making every choice for me. I'm 29 years old and I live in a body that cannot take a drink safely and don't even know it. I'm 29 years old suffering from an allergy to alcohol that I don't even know exists as I'm pouring a fifth or whatever came next down my throat every night. I'm 29 years old and I'm out of control. And when I live like that, I got to drink like that. When I drink like that, I got to live like that. And on it goes. You know? And on it goes. And that's when my bosses looked at me and they said, either you get sober or you get out. And so simply and so to save that job, I jumped on a plane, flew out to Effort, Pennsylvania and began that thing. Now, when I got out there, I guarantee you, no doubt in my mind, there were a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women in Effort, Pennsylvania, carrying a message of hope and a message of love and a message of recovery, a message of the 12 steps. They were carrying a message of God and I was hearing none of it. None of it. Why? Because we got a real simple principle in here, don't we? You cannot say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You just can't say the right thing. You could have Dr. Bob to my left, Bill Wilson to my right, and Lois pouring coffee, and I wouldn't heard a thing out in Pennsylvania. You know? Thanks, Lois. A little sweet and low. Yeah, thank you very much, you know? But by the same token, like, you can't say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You can't say the wrong thing to someone who is. Not when you're talking the language of the heart. Knowing the God in you touches the God in me, the magic we call recovery happens when one alcoholic reaches out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery. That magic, that power, electricity, impossible to describe, but to experience it. How many times has it happened to you? You're one-on-one with that guy. You're one-on-one with that gal. You're talking to that group, and all of a sudden something comes out of your mouth that you've never heard before. You never heard it. You never read it. You never said it. It goes, wow, that was good. Ha, that was, I got to write that down. That was good. You know, and 10 minutes later, you can't remember what you said. That's the language of the heart. Language of the head, you remember it. Happened to me all the time. All the time. But so began that journey. No, I might stay sober a week. I might stay sober a year. I might stay sober a week, a month, a year. At one point during that 12-year period, I stayed sober for 3 years. 3 years. You know? And I tell you that story because I think it's important. You know, I'll tell you that for this reason. I stayed sober in Alcoholics Anonymous during that 12-year stretch. The longest time I stayed sober was 3 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, taking no action. No steps, no recovery, no guidance, no sponsor, no big book, no God. Just coming to meetings, grabbing a cup of coffee, and taking my seat every night. That's all I was doing, you know? And I tell you that story because I think it's important. 3 years without a drink, suffering in sobriety, you know? Let me fast forward for a second. Let me take you to November 2001, my sobriety this time around. I landed a place. I am literally 14 days sober when I landed a place out in Falmouth, Massachusetts on Cape Cod. Place called the Miller House. And I tell you this story because I believe it's a classic example of God using us with or without our permission. God does not need our permission to use any one of us anytime he wants. A willing or unwilling, a conscious or unconscious instrument of a power greater than ourselves. Anytime he wants. He did that night. The guy's name was Joe. He was a counselor's aide at the Miller House. I'm out back having a smoke. It's my very first night there. I just got there. I'm out back having a smoke, and this guy Joe comes out, introduces himself to me, and starts talking to me. No, Joe was standing right here, right now with me, and I said, "Hey, Joe, remember that night we met at the Miller House, first night out there, and we were having a smoke out back, and you were talking to me, and you said da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and all likely, guys, I'm going to bet you Joe probably wouldn't remember what he said that night." 13 years, 9 months, and a couple days later, I'm still talking about it. Here's what he said. "So, Dave, you're back in AA after 12 years in and out, I guess, huh? You know, and you're looking for one more day of sobriety. And Dave, you think that's all we have to offer is just one more day sober? And that's it? And Dave, this time around, you're not going to take any action. You're doing nothing, Dave. You're taking no action, huh, to change the person you brought in. You're doing nothing to change the man you brought in." He goes, "My God, Dave, isn't it just a matter of time? If that's the case, isn't it just a matter of time? Doing nothing to change the man, doing nothing to change the woman, doing nothing to change the person you brought in." He said, "It's just a matter of time. How long can you hold your breath? How long, Dave, can you hold your breath before you're going to pick a drink back up again? Doing nothing to change the man, doing nothing to change the woman, doing nothing to change the person. It's just a matter of time." And the guy was right. 3 years. I can hold my breath. My experience tells me I got 3 years. I can hold my breath in here. 3 years. Taking no action in Alcoholics Anonymous. No guidance, no steps, no program of recovery, no God, no sponsor. Just white knuckle, fighting fight, hanging in, you know, monkey on my back, shooting for midnight sobriety, suffering untreated alcoholism. 3 years. And what did I do at the end of my 3 years? I did what anyone in this room who's relapsed did. Whether you stayed sober a week, a month, a year, or a decade, you did what I did at the end of your week, your month, your year, your decade. What do? At the end of my 3 years, what did I do? I made a sober decision. Had to be a sober decision. Hadn't touched one in 3 years. Of course it was a sober decision. I made a sober decision that night to pick that drink back up again. Holding that drink in my hand that night, drinking was not my problem. Couldn't have been. Hadn't touched one in three. I did not have a drinking problem that night. Hadn't had one for 3 years. You know what my problem was that night? I'll tell you exactly what my problem was that night. That night my problem was my sobriety. My ugly, miserable, untreated, I cannot stand it for another second sobriety, and my inability to live comfortably in it. I was solving the wrong problem again. Want to know the leading cause of relapse? I'll tell you. Sobriety. It is. Every time I relapse, I couldn't stand being sober for one more second. Bad case sobriety going on. And powerless? Oh, I was only going out for the weekend. Back Monday. Save my seat. I said that to someone. Back Monday. Yeah. See you then. Just one more Saturday night. Be right back, you know. And powerless, I was only going out for the weekend. And that weekend lasted 9 years. And during those 9 years, I will destroy and burn everything to the ground that means anything to me. Because you know what those 9 years look like, to be quite simple? I'll drink till I can stand that no more. Then I'll get sober till I can stand this no more. Then I'll get drunk. Then I'll get sober. Then I'll get drunk. Then I'll get sober. Before you know it, there goes another decade of my life. There goes another 10 years wasted and left in my path to wake and destruction a mile wide because I blow like a tornado through the lives of everyone who loves me. Like a tornado through the lives of everyone who loves me. And wake up maybe yet again, maybe if I'm lucky, in another nut house wondering what happened. Where'd everybody go? Where's my car? Whose clothes are these? You know? And I'm crawling out of that place yet again, all by myself, frustrated, lost, dying, hopeless, and confused. And I'm looking around saying, I got to build something out of nothing again. And I'm tired. You know? And I don't have much more fight left in me. And this just keeps happening. You know, this book gives us real simple instructions, huh? Clear-cut direction. Our stories disclose in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. For me, in the end, it's November 2001. I'm a walking show of the man I used to be. I'm unemployed and unemployable again. This time my partners threw me out. A six-figure income gone overnight. I'm trying to put a law practice together by day all by myself while I'm walking the streets of Boston at night doing whatever came next to get a drink. My friends are gone. They're so far gone, man. They're disgusted with me and want nothing to do with me and told me so. I'm all by myself. Tears in my parents' eyes on a nightly basis put there by my actions that I'm powerless over stopping. My mom and dad, they're not alcoholic, but they suffer from alcoholism. Mine. Every day, they suffered. Every bit of potential, ambition, and drive I once had are gone. I can't even get out of bed unless there's a bottle or a pipe waiting for me. Honor and dignity are lost in the dust of my addiction. My morals and values are warped beyond any sense of recognition. My bottle's empty. My wallet's empty. My life's empty. I'm living, one might say, to drink. It's the only thing I got out there that's giving me any relief, however short-lived it's becoming. And as short-lived it was, but it was relief nonetheless, and I had to keep going at it. You know? My last night out there was a Wednesday night, November 14, 2001, a night like any other for me. I copped an 8-ball, smoked it, banged back a fifth of tequila so I could forget about you and the rest of the world. And I closed some dive bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts. Like, I closed every bar I've ever been in. Lights are flashing. Dave, you got to go. You got to go. You know? Every bar. That's my history. Every bar. And that night was no different. I said, oh, my God, Jan, 2 o'clock, huh? I walked up. I grabbed my drink. I kicked back that last sip. I put that empty drink on the table having no idea. No idea that that would be my last drink to date. No idea. I swear to you, had I known that was going to be my last drink, guys, trust me, I would have ordered 2. You know, went for the road. Long road, you know. I believe from the moment that glass hit the bar, that empty glass, from that moment to this, right here, right now, from that moment to this, I've been living a plan, not my own. I didn't chart the course, design the destiny, or plot the path these last 13 years, 8 months, and a couple weeks. I didn't do it. Some power in my life far, far bigger than me stepped in. My plan, go home that night, pass out, get up the next day, and just do it all over again. That's my plan. But God had another. And that'll give you an idea of what it was like. Here's what happened. On the morning of Thursday, November 15, 2001, my sobriety date, I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to a knock on the door unlike any other knock I've ever heard in my entire life. And on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, 2 state and 2 local looking for me. And my run was over. The end of a long, sad, heart-wrenching, and oftentimes quite despicable run was over. Next thing you know, what happened that morning was I was one of 38 guys arrested from Miami to Boston. The feds had a sweep up the East Coast. 38 of us were arrested. 17 of us were in Boston. I was one of the 17. Next thing you know, I'm standing in front of United States Federal District Court Judge Mark Wolf, downtown Boston, Moakley Building. United States Federal Court, the feds, whole nother world. Let me tell you, we're not in Quakertown District anymore. You know what I mean? There's something going on over there. It's a totally different world. And the judge is looking down at us. And the judge is telling us the charges. The charges? Charges were conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. Kilograms. I buy 8 balls. You got the wrong guy. this is all wrong, you know? All wrong. I got 8 Colombians to my left, 8 Colombians to my right, and there's Dave Perry in the middle. It's like, what happened? You know, so wrong, you know? And Judge Wolf is telling us that none of us are, the charges if convicted carry 10 to life. And none of us are going home. No bail. No bail. We're not leaving. And if you were standing next to me that morning, shackled at the ankles, waist, and wrist to 16 strangers, with your dad in the back row of the courtroom in tears, trying to figure out where he went wrong with his son, I would have told you it's the worst day of my life. I would have told you this is, bar none, the undisputed worst day of my life. But tonight, I don't quite see it that way. Today I grabbed up my buddy Chris, jumped in my car, and drove out from Boston so I could let you guys know I don't quite see it that way anymore. Matter of fact, I'm here to report to you that I probably see the morning of November 15, 2001 as the single greatest event that's ever happened to me. And I'm also here to report without 1 ounce of reservation, without one scintilla of doubt, I'm here to report to you. I believe God sent those men. He sent them for me. He had a plan with my name, just like he had a plan with all yours too. I'm not unique. I'm no different. He's got a plan with all our names on it. Had mine for a long time. I just kept getting in the way every time he tried to kick it into gear. Had to catch my attention. My sponsor talks about direct hits. The FBI, direct hit. You know what I mean? Caught my attention. Yeah, they did, you know? I'll tell you the worst day of my life. I know exactly when it was. Saturday, November 17, 2001. 50 years to the day my mom and dad were married, and 50 years to the day we're celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Now, the fact I'm not at this wedding anniversary does not make this the worst day of my life. I miss family events along the way. This is nothing new. The reason why this is the worst day of my life is simply this. I'm in a place called Plymouth County Correctional Facility, Long Pond Road, Plymouth, Mass. I'm in a room about 10 times the size of this pavilion, 80 bunk beds spread across the place, new man, where they put us before they bring us to our individual cells. I'm sitting on my top bunk, thinking about my entire world back in Reading, celebrating with my family. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at the wall, and what I'm staring at is the payphone. And I'm realizing for the first time in my life, if I want to get up, walk across that room, and pick up that receiver. I got no one left. I cannot think of the name of one single solitary person left in my entire world who wants to hear my voice on the other end of that phone have anything to say back to me. How microscopically small my world had become. And realized it right there. And guys, that's my bottom. That's it. That's it right there. I don't want to let it dip any deeper, drop any lower, slide any further. I found mine. I got mine. I was in Baltimore 10, 12 years ago. I heard a woman named Liz take a podium. 400 of us in the room. She was talking to me. She asked a question I'll never forget. She said, "Hey, have you found that place in your world where you got no place left to go but to God? Are you there yet? Do you realize that there's no human power on earth that's going to relieve us of our out? None. Our job here is one thing and one thing only. We need to find a power by which we can live. It has to be one that's bigger than us, obviously. That's all we're doing here. My prayer that night, what's wrong with me? That's a prayer. It got answered. 5, 6, 7 days later, I got pulled out of that cell. I'm back before the court. I'm here but for the grace of God, the compassion of the federal government. They gave me a chance to find my recovery if I wanted it. Needing it meant nothing, wanting it everything, and gave me a chance to... Charges weren't going away, but they put me in the Federal Pretrial Service Division to get some treatment. I spent the next 10 days in a detox, 4.5 months at the Miller House on Falmouth, back to Boston to a halfway house, onto a sober house. And for the first 8 months of my sobriety, just like those 12 years, in and out, in and out, in and out, no different. Miserably sober, sentenced to sobriety. The only thing and the one thing that was keeping me sober, the one and only thing, fear. If I picked up a drink, the federal marshal was picking me up, and I'm going back to Plymouth. Period. So I'm afraid, but that is not our solution. Temporary fix, but not our solution. Fear won't do it. But God had yet again another miracle in my life happen. On July 21st, 2002, 8 months sober, Let me tell you the story. Old friend of mine back in the 90s, his name is Steve, and I know a lot of you guys know him. Steve was a friend of mine in Boston. 8 years, stock raving out of his mind, no program, no recovery sobriety going on back in Boston. 8 years. I went out and started drinking. He stayed sober. At the 8-year mark in 1997, he got sick, had to leave Boston, move back to Baltimore to be with his family. A year into it, on a Monday night, in a little town called Elk Ridge, Maryland, he went to a meeting one night. And that night, as God would have it, who stood at the podium but the late, great, and wonderful Tom Flynn, an absolute giant in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, touched the lives of tens of thousands of men and women. Tom that night took the podium and carried a message of hope and a message of love and a message of recovery and a message of God that Steve never quite heard before. Steve went up to Tom after the meeting and said, Tom, I never heard anyone talk like you're talking. Never heard it sound like you're saying it. Can you show, I'm 8 years out of my mind in this deal. Will you show me what you're talking about? And that's the night he began to follow that man down this path. That's the night my friend Steve turned his ugly, miserable sobriety into recovery. I don't know this is happening. I'm paying no attention to Steve. I got a crack pipe and a bottle in my hand back in Boston, not really wondering what he's doing down there. But he was watching for me. Heard about the arrest, the fact that I was in treatment. He gave me a call. Here's what he said. July 2002, 8 months sober. Dave, my sister's going up to Winnipesaukee, up in New Hampshire. She's got a cottage for a week. I can only get 3 days off from work, but I'm going to go in. I'm going to fly into Boston on Sunday, July 21st. Head up for 3 days. Want to go? Seconds and inches, huh, guys? Seconds and inches, how our lives can change. What if I was busy, couldn't get off from work? What if I didn't have time? What if the PO wouldn't let me leave the state? You know what I mean? Guarantee, if anything else was the case, I wouldn't be here today. I would not be here today. You know? I thought of a little vacation with an old friend. Had no idea God was sending me my sponsor. Flying him in from Baltimore. He gets in my car that Sunday morning, July 21st, 2002, at Logan Airport. He gets in my car. He looks different, sounds different, acts different, inexplicably different. This guy, something about his eyes, fresh skin and glowing, on fire. The exact same experience Bill Wilson describes at the end of that bleak November 1934, whenever he came to dinner, is exactly what's going on in my car that morning. He looks it, sounds it, and he's different. And I can tell you guys, within 15 minutes of talking to this guy, he gave me the greatest gift that one alcoholic can give another. He gave me a little bit of hope. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get what he had. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could feel like he felt. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I'd get set free, because he was free. He was set free. And it was attractive. It was attractive. He talked about this big book like the thing had a heartbeat. He talked about God like he just came from having lunch with the guy. You know what I mean? It was powerful, it was attractive, and I wanted it. You know? And he said, you're talking about these steps, Steve? These steps? When do I start these steps? He goes, when do you want to recover? When I'm not talking sobriety, Dave. Hell, I could tie you to a tree, you'll get sober. You want to get recover? When do you want the pain to stop? When do you want that to finally end? When do you want to get set free? I go, Steve, 8 months, so I'm only 8 months. Should I wait? He goes, where are you coming up with the weight? Where? Nowhere in our history, nowhere in our literature, nowhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, nowhere in the 12 steps, nowhere in our big books to say that's the way. As a matter of fact, it says just the opposite. If you decide you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you're ready, you're ready, you're ready. I don't care if you're throwing up from your last drink, wipe off your mouth. Let's get started in here. Let's get it going. You know? I said, but 8 months, what if I make a mistake? He goes, make a mistake? He goes, how long did you drink for, David? I said, 27 years, Steve. He's a little late to worry about a mistake, don't you think? You know? My God, Dave, he said, how long are you going to come? How long? 12 years I watched. 12 years of half measures. How long are you going to let your half measures avail you nothing? How many times, Dave, are you going to stand at the turning point just to whip yourself around and walk away like you've done so? How many times, Dave, how long are you going to let your old ideas kill you? Your results seem to be keep coming up nil. 12 years of nil. 12 years. How long, Dave, are you going to come to a 12-step program and ignore the 12 steps? In my case, 12 years, just my lucky number. You know what I mean? But I said to him, I go, Steve, man, you heard me, man. You know what's going on in my life. I got real life problems going on. You know what's happening with me. I got federal charges hanging on my head. Carry a potential of 10 to life, they tell me. I'm going to get despotted. I'm going to lose my career. I know that's going to happen. I don't have a friend left in the world. They're all gone. My tears in my parents' eyes. I don't have a thing left in the bank. The IRS wants it. I got real life problems going on. Seriously, this guy's coming with prayers and inventories. You know what? I'm looking for lawyers and loans. You know, I got real life stuff going on. You know? How is that possibly going to help me? He goes, I get it, Dave. I get it. Hear me out. I understand what you're saying. You got walls up. You got walls up. You got walls up everywhere, don't you, huh? Walls up between you and your family. Walls up between you and your friends. Walls up between you and your finances. Walls up between you and your career. Walls up between you and the law. Walls up everywhere you turn. You built big and huge, heavy walls everywhere you turn in your life, haven't you? Here's what I'm going to promise you. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If you just walk down this path with me, if you just follow behind me down this path, and you let me show you how to put these principles alive in your world, here's what I'm going to promise. I'm going to promise you that one by one by one by one, by one, by one, by one, every one of those walls are going to come crashing down. And the most amazing part of the whole thing, Dave, is you'll have nothing to do with it. I'm going to show you a way that you can stay about God's business and let God take care of yours. How about that? When you're not looking, He'll take care of every one of those problems. I'm going to show you a way. He says, you want to get to know God? You want to get to know God? He says, get to know His kids. Hang with His kids. Run with His kids. Reach out to His kids. Do God's work by helping His other kids. And you watch one by one by one by one. I'm not going to guess. I'm not going to hope. I'm not going to pray. I'm going to promise every one of those walls will come crashing down. Every one. I said, Steve, you're talking about these steps. I know. I see them hanging on the wall, staring me in the face every meeting I go to. I said, what do you do, Steve? How do you do these steps? You don't understand them. How do you do these steps? You don't agree with them. How do you do these steps? You don't even believe they're going to work for you. I said, Steve, that's it. Steve says, David, that's just it, man. You don't have to understand, agree, or believe they're going to work. I said, well, how do you do them? He says, David, all you have to do is simply become willing to follow a person who's already done them. He says, the greatest promise is on page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. He says, can you walk behind me down a path? He said, can you stay 3 feet behind me down a path? You don't got to say what I say. You don't got to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I got. Because it's a program of action. Your recovery is not in your head. It's not what you see. It's not what you hear. It's not what you say. It's not what you read. It's not what you study. It's all about what you do. Or in your case, Dave, what you've never done. We have a whole bunch of actions we take. Directions are real simple, laid out right here in this book. And guess what? I will show you how to do them. If you want to walk down this path with me. And that's the morning, guys, I turned my ugly, miserable sobriety into recovery and started walking down this path. And I'm here to report to you tonight, every promise that man said, every promise that he made to me that morning, every one of them has started to come true. And I'm also here to report to you, immediate action will get you immediate results. And that's my experience. I jumped in that morning. By 3 that afternoon, we're pulling the car to the side of the road up at Limboid and Pasaukee in New Hampshire. And I'm getting out and I'm turning to page 63 and I'm taking the third step. The most powerfully life-changing prayer in my entire world is on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the third step prayer. The day I became an agent. I had no idea the impact that morning. I had no idea. That afternoon when I took that step, I became an agent of God, having secret agents of God. That's all we are in here, you know. I had no idea the impact would be in my life. Well, how about this, you guys? The 5 words on page 63 that changed my life. We had a new employer. Now, I didn't know then what I was doing to the extent that it would be in my life. I offered myself to God that day. I said, build with me and do with me. I want to work for you, God. New employer, new job duties, new job responsibilities, new rate of pay comes with the job. Don't think it doesn't, you know. I took on a new job that day. God's my boss. I'm here today, seriously, at your invitation tonight. Thank you very much for having me. But to be quite honest, God sent me. Just doing my third step. I got on my knees like I do every morning. This morning I got on my knees, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. God, what do you want me to do today? Punching in, God, I'm punching in. What's on my to-do list today? What do you want me to do? He said, I want you to grab up Chris. I want you to get in that car. And I want you to drive out to Quakertown. And I want you to carry my message to my kids out there. I want you to carry my message. Show off to me, would you, Dave? I go, I can do that. I can do that. God, what do you want me to tell him when I get there? He says, I'll tell you when you get there. You just get there. Your job is get there. Just show up. You know? And that's what I've been doing ever since. Get back in the car after taking that third step, offered myself to God, took on that new employer, said to my sponsor, woo-hoo-hoo, third step done, let's get some dinner. He says, no, let's get a notebook. Drove me to a country school, walked inside, bought a notebook and a pen. The guy stood over me while I wrote a 4-step. 3 hours later, I was done. Some guys will say, you can't write a 4-step in 3 hours. Come on, man. Well, calling me wrong, but calling me recovered. It worked, you know what I mean? Searching, fearless, and thorough. I put it all on paper. Next 2 days, I read my sponsor, my 5th step. Only problem now is what? We're back at Logan. Our 3 days are up. We're back at Logan. Oh, my God. He's jumping on a plane, flying back to Baltimore. I go, whoa. How are you going to sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you going to do that? Don't you have to pick me up, give me rides, lend me money, buy me cigarettes? How are you going to do that from Boston to Baltimore? I am getting gypped, I said. I'm getting gypped. You know what he does? He walks up to me. He takes the book. He slides it under my arm. And he whispers 2 words in my ear that I'll never forget. He says, Dave, we got to trust God. We got to trust God. We can do this. We got planes, trains, automobiles. Hey, Dave, we have telephones. We can do this. You've had it wrong for so long, Dave. You see, you think you got to get your life in order before you get out there and help God's other kids? No, 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 no. You got to get out there and help God's other kids now in order to get your life in order. Now. And it starts now. He says, you got one day of sobriety? Show the guy with no days how you got one. Oh, 7 days? We got 2 days over here. Could you help her out? Oh, by the way, 2 weeks? Here's 4 weeks. Come on over. Show us how you did that. Now, look, I'm not saying don't take him through the steps yet if you haven't been. You know, wait on that. But my God, can you reach your hand out now? I lived in a sober house with 12 lunatics beside me. My sponsor said, go help them. I go, what? And to be honest with you, I haven't looked back since. We did the next 7 steps over the phone. Took 3 weeks. 3 weeks over the phone. A man armed with the facts about himself and experience with these 12 steps transmitted this message over the phone. Why? Because we relied on God. And it worked. It worked. 3 weeks. And guess what happened? Guess what started to happen, you guys? I started to get that spiritual awakening. That spirit that was so dead when I got here, flatlined dead in that courtroom that day, shackled at the ankles, waist, and wrists of 16 strangers, dad in the back row crying. My spirit that day was dead. Flatlined dead. And it slowly started to come alive and awake. Not by what I said, not by what I read, not by what I heard, not by what I studied, but rather what I started to do. I started to move my feet. I started taking action. I didn't believe it would even work. Given with direction at my sponsor. Not a program for lazy people. There's things to do every day. I don't stay clean on yesterday's shower. Don't stay fed on yesterday's meal. Don't stay physically fit on yesterday's workout at the gym. And I'm not staying spiritually fit on yesterday's action. Every day is a day we carry the vision. Every day. You know? I'm not staying spiritually fit on yesterday's action. But here's the beauty of it, guys. When I do a little bit or a lot every day, no matter what it might be, I get to stay spiritually fit. And when I'm spiritually fit, check it out. There's nothing for a drink to fix. Boom. And I ain't looking. And the most amazing thing I can report to you tonight, somewhere along this journey, one day I looked up. And my obsession to drink, bar none the most powerfully destructive force in my life, has been removed. It's gone. It doesn't exist today. I'm not here fighting the fight tonight. Not here hanging in. No monkey on my back. Not shooting for midnight. I've been set free. How is that possible? When? What day? What day? When? When between July 21st, 2002, August 31st, 2015? When? In that time frame did I wake up one morning and say, my God, it's gone. It's been lifted. It's not here. I don't know when that happened. Can't tell you when that happened. Why? I had nothing to do with it. One by one by one by one, the walls come down. One by one, when I'm out there staying about God's business, when I'm not looking, he took it. And it hasn't come back since. If I had anything to do with it, I'd be able to tell you the date. Have no clue. No clue. We're on the 12th step. We're 3 weeks in. He's down in Baltimore. I'm in Boston. He's on the 12th step. We're on a little direction on the 12th step tonight, Dave. I go, Steve, I'm ready. What do you want me to do? He goes, here's what I want you to do. You ready? I go, here, hit me up. Hit me up. What's up? What's up? He goes, you're going to a meeting? I said, I'm going downtown. I'm going to Newbury Street. He goes, oh, here's what I want. You ready? I said, hit me. What? He goes, tonight I want you to change it up. I go, what do you mean change it up? He goes, tonight when you go out to that meeting, I want you to change it up. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, tonight when you walk in that meeting, Dave, instead of you walking in that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, how about you walk in that meeting tonight? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to walk in that meeting looking to see what you can bring. That's what I want you to do. I want you to walk in. I want you to find that new guy in the corner all by himself and let him know he never has to be alone again. Find that gal over there, second row, third seat in, shaking away, and let her know she never has to feel that way again. Because we want you to talk about recovery. I want you to talk about these steps. I want to talk about the action you've taken these last 3 weeks. I want to talk about the God you find. You know what I want tonight, Dave? Here's what I want you to do. I want you walking that meeting. I don't want you walking out till you find a man to sponsor. I go, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. I'm 3 weeks all by myself in a sober house full of lunatics. You're down in Baltimore with Tom Flynn and a big book in your hand, Tom Flynn next to you. I'm not ready for this. How do you possibly think I'm ready? I'm not experienced enough. I'm not qualified. He says, David, I know you're not qualified, and you know you're not qualified, but that new guy in the corner's got no clue you're not qualified. Get over there and help him. And the guy's right. He's got no clue. I got no clue. You know what I got? I got my hand out. And that's all he sees. Because the fact of the matter is, I am no more qualified than anyone in this pavilion, in this yard right here, right now, to carry this message. I'm no more qualified than my sponsor with his 27 years, or my grand sponsor with his 108 years, or whatever that white-haired guy has. I had no idea. Why? Because God does not look for qualified men and women to carry his message. He looks for the willing. Are you willing? Are you willing? It's like Tom said to me all the time, Dave, are you a faithful trustee of the gift? If you told me that once, he told me it 100 times, that man, before he died. Are you a faithful trustee of the gift? Or did you get the busies, he'd say. You got the busies, Dave? You got the busies? What's it? You're so damn busy chasing the money, the property, the prestige. You had those before they fill the hole. Says, besides, Dave, I saw when you got out of the nut house, you didn't look too busy to me that day. Let's go, you know? And he was right. Fresh out of detox all day long. Nothing to do, you know? So what's my message? As we zero in at 9 o'clock or a couple seconds after, we get a solution. It's a real live solution that works. But it doesn't work by just coming to sit in a meeting, grabbing a cup of coffee and sitting down. There's things to do. We got to move our feet. It's a program of action. 80 years ago, the victory, the miracle happened. One alcoholic found his way to a kitchen table with another alcoholic in Akron, Ohio, June 10th, 1935. 80 years later, the miracle's still alive and available. And the only decision you need to make today, if you haven't made it already, is whether you want to experience and become part of a wholesale miracle in your life that's already happened or not. Are you here tonight drinking? Are you in a dark place tonight drinking? Welcome. Are you in a dark place tonight sober? Welcome. I got that down. I know that one. We can walk you out of the darkness and into the sunlight. We call it the sunlight of the Spirit. And we can walk you there. And we can show you a whole new world. Like I say, we don't get a lock on miracles, but we sure get our share fair of them in here, don't we, guys? We sure get a lot. Before I sit down, can I just tell you about the last couple of years? Just bring you up to date in my life. November 15, 2001. That's the day of my sobriety date. That's also the day I was arraigned before Judge Wolf, Chief Justice, United States Federal District Court, Mark Wolf. 2 years later, I appeared before Judge Wolf a second time, October 22, 2003. I went before him that day for sentencing. I ended up pleading guilty to the charges because I was guilty of the charges. I thought it was best, you know. Let me tell you about that day. The charges in the federal government, in the federal system, they have sentencing guidelines. My participation in that conspiracy landed me anywhere from 0 to 30 months. I could have gotten sentenced from 0 to 30 months. And the guy handling it for the United States Attorney's Office, the United States Attorney, was a guy named Patrick Hamilton, Assistant U.S. Attorney Patrick Hamilton, handling it for the federal government. And with Mr. Hamilton, a man who I had respect for then, and I have respect for now. Immense respect, to be quite honest. Even given the fact he came into the courthouse that day, October 22nd, 2003, ready to ask Judge Wolf that I be sentenced to the entire 30 months. He wanted 2.5 years. And when all the arguments were said and done that day, I'll never forget it, you guys. I'll never forget Judge Wolf. He looks up at him and he says, "Not today, Mr. Hamilton. Not today. Judging by this stack of letters and the 40 people standing behind Mr. Perry in this courtroom today, it would appear to me that it's having some sort of effect on the recovery community here in Boston, and it only makes sense. We leave him on the street doing whatever he's doing." And I got 5 years probation. 4 months later, the Massachusetts Bar Association took my license. And rightly so. I broke the rules. I committed a major felony. Remember I told you? One by one by one by one, the walls come down. When I came out last year to visit you last August, I had to report to you I still had one wall still standing. My sponsor promised me they'd all come down, and I was praying that he was right about this last one standing, but I couldn't be sure. And that's what I told you last year. Tonight I get to report to you guys, the last one's come down. On December 18, 2014, a little over 9 months ago, I got called back before Judge Wolf for a third time. Same courtroom, number 10, fifth floor, United States Federal District Court, downtown Boston. This time I was there at Judge Wolf's personal invitation, asking if he could swear me back into practice. And I got reinstated that day. He had my friends and my family, my mom and my dad sitting in the jury box, as he personally swore me back in.
And the tears were gone.
You can't get here from there, you guys. You can't get here from there. It's humanly impossible. Humanly impossible. My sponsor says, the judge who swears me in, or who arraigns me in November 2001, sentenced me in 2003, swore me back in 2014. He says, you can't make this shit up. You just can't make this shit up. And you can. So before let me just end it like that, telling you guys, we get miracles here. And they're all available for you too. And my prayer tonight is that if you haven't made the decision yet, that you make the decision tonight to take part and experience those miracles in your life too. Because I guarantee if you do, this room is full of men and women who carry this message. I've been here before. I got a lot of friends whose lives are dedicated to doing that very thing. We can't do this without you. Come with us. Come with us. And I guarantee it'll blow you away. God bless you guys. Thank you.
Okay, the group would like to thank Dave once again.